accept that you look the way you do and still turn up to sex, because sexual energy and feeling sexy, it's an energy. It's not a status. It's not like a thing that you are or not. It's just an energy that exists in our bodies, and you get to experience that no matter what you look like.
I'm Sarah Kearns, and welcome to the podcast. This is a safe space to discuss the topics affecting everyday families. Let's take an inside look into our own realities and the realities of others. We'll learn together as knowledge creates empathy. Empathy shapes the way that we act, and those actions can change our family and those around us. This is the Conscious Project. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have an incredible guest on to talk all things sex, intimacy, and pleasure. Catherine Halcyon is a sex and relationship therapist, a personal coach for women, and host of her own podcast, Soul and Sex. She's kind, maternal, and you can't help but be drawn to her and her energy. We discuss some pretty big topics, including low libido after children, answering the question that everybody asks, how much sex is everybody else having, sex and mental health after trauma, body shame, self-pleasure, even re-identifying our sexual orientation. If you need further support after this podcast, please see the show notes for support services. You'll also be able to find the links to Catherine's socials and websites here. This episode isn't suitable for little ears, so pop those AirPods on and enjoy. Hi, Catherine, and welcome to the Conscious Project.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, I've been so excited, but a little bit nervous. I'm a little bit out of my comfort zone here. So I'm, yeah, very excited, but a little bit interested to see how this conversation's going to go.
No, I'm so excited to be here. When you like reached out to me, I was like, oh my God, yes, of course, I would be honored.
I just find it so fascinating for your work as a whole. So you're a sex and relationship therapist, but you also do a lot of work with women and coaching women.
Yep, definitely. A large portion. I do have some men, or, you know, like non-binary as well. Like I have a whole range of people, but generally women identifying people. Yes, absolutely.
How amazing. And I think I'll just acknowledge right now, and an apology to all listeners, that I am obviously married to a man. So I probably will naturally revert back to a very heteronormative dialogue. But this is obviously a safe space for all of our LGBTQIA friends. Everybody's welcome. And obviously you'll differentiate if things are different along, you know, with different types of relationships and stuff. But
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I'm a proud community member of the LGBTQI plus collective. So you've got a friend here if you're one of those people. I'm here too.
Beautiful. I actually popped it up on my stories before anyone knew that this podcast was even a thing. And I popped it up and I just sort of said, like, what for those people in relationships and those who are not, if you could speak to a sexologist or a sex therapist anonymously and have those burning questions be answered, what would you say? And I could not believe the amount of responses that came in. Like there were well over 500 within like the first maybe 6 or 7 hours of my stories being up, which is just insane to me. I thought it would, like, I would get crickets, to be honest.
That's crazy.
I know. And we've got so many beautiful questions. And so Catherine and I have spoken, and, you know, we thought, oh, we'll probably touch on some of the things we wanted to talk to first, and then we're going to just cover like just such a big range of different questions. So yeah, hang around for the whole episode because this one's going to get interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so excited. Juicy ones and really important conversations too.
I love that. Yeah. So you are a host of your own podcast, we should say. All of these informations and the information about Catherine will obviously be in the show notes for you to find her on Instagram or her own podcast, which I have totally binged on since I found, which is called Soul and Sex. But in that one of your podcasts, you said great sex is whatever works for you, with the exception of hurting others. And at just Oh, it was just like such a moment for me that went, wow, like that's so comforting, I think, for other people to hear.
Yeah, I think like humans have a tendency to make things far more complicated than they need to be. Like, people to ask me for just like one line on like how to have better sex, generally I'm just like, what works for you? And they'll be like, oh, I like really like it when my partner does this thing to me. I'm like, great. Does it hurt you or does it hurt him? No. Okay, great. You're having good sex. Like, it's really simple. And like, if you think about it, as long as like you're not hurting yourself or you're not hurting others, and that relates to consent and legalities, obviously, then literally anything goes. So great sex is whatever works for you.
One of the biggest questions was, what is normal? Like, how much sex is everybody else having?
Yeah. So the research is, I think it's after a 1 year relationship, young adults to adults are having sex roughly 2 times a week, but older adults towards the 50 age mark, it's roughly 1 to 2 times per month. But like with everything, and I really, really want to emphasize this, it's quality over quantity. So check in with your intentions. And I love relating sex to food. And like eating, because like you've got, you know, my analogy is like cheap and fast and easy food that you crave a quick high from, but has a huge come down and a hangover afterwards. We have sex like that doesn't really, it feels icky and it feels like a quick rush, and then we regret it afterwards. And then there's the mediocre, nice and easy food that's fine, you know, in the middle. But then there's the gourmet food that you take your time with. You set the table all nice for once a week and you eat it slowly with good company. So I don't really like, if someone comes to me and it says they're only having sex once a year, I don't really think, oh God, they're not having sex. I think like, well, how is that one time? And they might say like, it's heaven on earth. And I'm so happy with them. I'm like, yes, great. You know, and then there are couples that are having sex every single day and they are miserable together. So we need to normalize quality over quantity. That should be the conversation that we're having.
Like you said, like your relationship really, like I've been in a relationship now for 12 years with the same man, and it's our relationship goes in ebbs and tides. Like it depends what's happening in your life and what, you know, between children and careers and just so many different stresses and things that, you know, it could change. Every year looks different.
Exactly.
I love how you talk about different seasons on your podcast, and I'm going to keep referring back to your podcast because like I said, I literally binged it. But there's an episode where you talk about the different seasons of your life. And yeah, I would love for you to explain that and how it, you know, applies to being in a relationship.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's so funny. My clients hear this from me all the time, and I bang on about cycles and seasons so often because it is so relative. And it applies to everything. Like I wrote a book on it, cycle mapping, but that's specifically relative to the female hormonal cycle. But it kind of relates to everything as well, because there are cycles and seasons in everything. And I think like it's really, really helpful when we recognize this. So the way that, and we can really relate this to giving and receiving, you know, it's everywhere, you know, babies, having a baby, a tree, in the seasons in the tree. Like there's patterns of giving and receiving everywhere in life. And this relates to sex and relationships because great sex is kind of, it usually comes down to some kind of magnetism, some push and pull. So in any one moment or like position, there's somebody who is completely receiving, the other person's doing all the work and the penetrating and the giving. And then in terms of relationships, though, it's really, really common for this kind of magnetism, this polarity, what we call polarity, to fizzle out, because especially during COVID and everything, we're living on top of each other and our lifestyles kind of tend to reflect each other, like they get really similar, and we lose that sense of individuality that puts us on either end of the spectrum of, you know, giving and taking, and there's that sense of balance. So we kind of, and that comes back to something that I really believe in about individuality and sense of inner union and having a strength within yourself. We need our own separate lives and sense of inner strength to create this giving and receiving balance in our relationships and great sex. But that being said, like it's not for everyone. Like some people really like to be quite similar in bed and vice versa. It's got nothing to do with body parts. It's just an energy that you bring to the table. But I'm really passionate about seasons. And I think helping, it really helps people see things in a long-term perspective. You know, mental illness, for example, I've seen a lot of people really resonate with this concept. Like, yeah, I'm just in a winter phase of my life, but you know what comes next? Spring. And just trusting the process of life.
That's such a positive way to look at it when you are feeling really stuck in that winter that the next season's coming.
Yeah.
It's around the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I think one of the other top questions that came up was about love languages. Mm-hmm. What do you think about love languages?
Yeah, I think they're like a sweet kind of play on compatibility. And I think it's really helpful for some people. And, you know, they don't always match up. You know, it's not for everyone, like horoscopes, you know, it's just a thing. I'm not even sure if it's like research-based. Doesn't matter. Some people really enjoy them. And, yeah, I think what we need to start like emphasizing as well is like how you're doing your love languages for yourself, because you have a relationship with yourself as well. And if your love language that you like to give outwards is like time, there's a good chance that that's what you actually crave yourself as well. And so again, coming back to this idea of inner union and self-fulfillment before outsourcing and going outwards of yourself into a relationship, you need to first nourish the relationship you have within. And how's your love language with yourself?
I'm just like, oh, my brain's just going all the places. Like, and it's even with your kids. Like I've noticed like my eldest is like, will just like lose his mind over gifts. Like it doesn't even matter what it is. If you've bought him something, he just feels like his whole face look like lights up, like he's the most special kid in the whole world. Where my middle child couldn't care less. Like he's not into things or toys but he is like, there's never a moment when he's not physically touching you at some point. Like yeah. He's just an absolute snuggle. Yeah. So it's so amazing to break it down. Like I am such an acts of service. Like clean the house. And I would take them over flowers any day of my life.
Yeah, I'm definitely a physical touch. I'm just like need to be attached, like one of those creatures, like a mollusk on a rock at the beach, just like not letting go.
That's my middle child. He'll sit next to you and then one leg will come over and then like his hand will be on your face. And then all of a sudden he'll actually go under your shirt and pop his head out the top of your neck.
I know that you're describing a child, but I'm like, this is me. Like,
yeah. It's like you've literally morphed back into my body, child. It's so beautiful. So go and have a look into love languages. Anyone listening and they're thinking, I'm not too sure. There's actually like little quizzes you can do online and things about like what is my child or what is my partner and I think it makes a lot of sense then when you like I would then identify things that Brad would do and I would go, oh, okay, that was actually him showing me love, even though I was actually like, don't worry about doing that. Just like do the dishes. Like, I don't care about all that.
Exactly. It's really important to learn like what yours is and what theirs is and like learning, I guess it's like each relationship has its own signature language. And that's what's really fun is like every time you enter a new relationship, you have to relearn a whole new language, basically a combination of languages. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, it's so funny because I'm so deep in like the love and relationships world that I'm like, there's stigma towards people that enjoy receiving gifts. But I actually think it's really special, like, you know, having someone think like, oh, I saw this and I thought of you. And like, I love surprise gifts and flowers. Like, that's really special. So, you know, there's so receiving gifts and then physical touch, which I think a lot of people just like the PDA, like a lot of people like private and public displays of affection. They enjoy really sitting quite close to their lover at the party and stuff. They might not be talking, but they just like to, you know, be holding hands or something. Then there's quality time. You know, a really common one is like, I like spending time together without screens, just us connecting. And acts of service, like we've talked about, Sarah. So I think really common these days, it's like you called their family to check in on them, or they did your laundry, went and filled up your petrol for you, just like without you knowing. And then words of affirmation, which is like one of the big ones, because we are verbal, intelligent creatures and we have a really complicated language and dialect. And so like, I love the random conversations we have, you know, but this gets deep in this day and age. So you've got texting, voice memos, deep phone calls, letters, cards. I have a friend that her partner puts little notes in her lunchbox and writes poems for her.
Cute.
Yeah. Romance is not dead, guys.
No, that is adorable. And I think if you're really struggling to like connect with your partner and perhaps that you aren't just speaking that same language and you're missing those little things that they're doing that they think they're like, why does she not get that I love her? Why is she, does she not feel loved or feel appreciated or, you know, and I think that that's such a big thing in relationships, particularly once they've been, you know, around for a while, that if you're not feeling appreciated, it turns into a resentment. And, you know, if your cup's really empty, the last thing you want is your partner to go and fill their cups. It becomes this competition, like who's putting one on the board over the other person. And you may just be missing it. You may think that, you know, because they're not, you're not speaking the same language or they're not sure how to show you, they're wasting all their time mowing the lawns when you're really, you're like, I would rather you just sit here and talk to me. That shows me, you know, that you love me more. So, yeah, there's a whole world in with it, isn't there?
I know. And it becomes like this whole like science. It's very interesting. So people either like do it seriously or have never heard of it. So it's quite interesting. But if you haven't heard of it, I did do an episode and I couldn't tell you which one it was, but I think it's like one of my first podcast episodes all about it and like what to avoid if they like acts of service, they probably don't like something else, like all of these different things that you can do. So I get really specific.
Oh, I think this would probably come up for you all the time when you speak to parents. And obviously we'll talk about mothers that have birthed a child. And, you know, that often after that physical birth being, you know, vaginal or C-section, but having that pain and recovery and that time and then and moving into their new world as a mum and as a parent and a caregiver and low libido, you know, that comes with all of that. So I thought maybe we could break that down a little. Sorry, I just like lumped about six things on you, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's just all this, it's like that season, right, of that new parenthood is just such a big season.
Exactly. And it's like a milestone life season. It's such a special time. Like, you know, there are those, I mean, depends who you are. Some people have their marriage, their retirement, their university, their baby, like there's so many different seasons of life and this is one of them. And so, yeah, I really do want to touch on that analogy again. There's this idea that I don't know where it began. I think maybe it was a lot of the crappy messages from media about like, oh, she got her mum bod back after 6 weeks and she's already dating. And like, there's a lot of, I don't, and these days that's less prevalent, which is great, but it's still kind of lingering in our generation. And a lot of people try and rush the process of postnatal life. But it needs to be like a really slow and introverted time where your body is actually evolutionarily wired to forge a really deep and beautiful bond with your baby. Like it's an evolution thing. You're not like, I mean, you don't have to, but like that's how your body is wired. And actually a lot of parents feel liberated when they hear this. They're like, oh God, so you mean we don't have to have sex? Thank God. Like we thought we were meant to be having sex immediately. We don't feel like it. Everyone's got like an entirely different period of rest. Some people won't have sex for like a whole year. There is no such thing as normal. I come back again to quality over quantity. And a lot of people who are like breastfeeding, for example, find it really difficult to think about this. It's like when you first have your baby, you've literally given your body away so much. Like you are giving milk away, your baby's all over you. You might have more kids that are all hanging off you. And then your partner wants to touch you and you feel icky. You've got nothing left to give. So I think like stepping into a perspective of resting and receiving and learning to receive pleasure rather than having to give yourself to your partner, like stepping into that perspective can be really, really helpful. And the other thing that really comes up a lot for postnatal people is pain, and that's really, really normal. And I want to say that you haven't failed at childbirth if you have pain. Like you haven't failed. There's like this idea that it's like, yeah, baby's done, now I'm in like newborn bliss. But it's really common to have pain. There's a lot that's just happened. So medical options, I think it's really best just to start with your gynecologist or your OB-GYN for like scar creams, mending creams and what have you. But from a more holistic perspective, a lot of people and cultures actually swear by yoni steaming, which is basically like you have to do this carefully, obviously, and you probably have babies around as well, but boiling water and you hover over it and just let the steam with like a skirt made from either a skirt or like a towel. And a lot of people swear by it for scar mending and just like the soft steam is really nice on your vagina, basically. And then massaging the tissues to restore blood to the tissue and just to quicken the healing process is also really, really important. But I just want to emphasize, like, throughout this process, in sex at least, quality over quantity. How can you introduce sexual energy without actually having sex to build up the momentum again? So maybe just lots of touching, a lot of eye gazing, a lot of intimacy, and a lot of love. And then sex will naturally feel encouraged in the relationship and will happen eventually.
I think that's so important, because obviously a lot of mums are just like, I am so touched out. Like, by 9 o'clock, I just want to scroll aimlessly on my phone or watch TV and just absolutely switch my brain off and not be touched. Just have some me time to recenter after a whole day of literally, you know, particularly if you're breastfeeding, literally having a baby hanging off me and sucking everything out of me. I just am touched out. So it's, you know, taking the focus of actually having sex and going into that more intimacy. And, you know, I love that. I'm going to go refer back to your podcast again, but I'm probably just going to probably just keep doing that. But there was a part where you said, like, you know, making a beautiful meal that you actually are going to enjoy, or ordering it in because, you know, mum life, or and pouring a glass of wine and actually sitting there with your partner and enjoying something that is a, you know, a pleasure in a different way can so be so much less pressure and feel like, you know, you're being touched. It will naturally lead that way when you're giving your body pleasure in different ways.
Exactly. So think momentum. So start small, start with something that's like pleasure focused and present. So if you are having a wine, turn the TV off, and I don't know, if you have a fire pit outside or something, just like go and enjoy yourselves. And it'll naturally happen when your circadian rhythms and stress start to ease. I mean, like, childbirth throws off your whole entire clock as well. So I'm really big on circadian rhythms, which is our natural sleep and energy cycle that we go through 24-hour periods, and it's based off like the sun. It's totally like science based, but like having a baby throws that off because you're literally up at like all crazy hours of the night, and your body is basically disenfranchising all of your pleasure and arousal. It's like, no, we don't have time for that. We don't even know what time of day it is right now. Like, I've not got time to have another baby.
Lady, get your head back in the game.
Exactly. So, like, you know, just give yourself grace. Like, Jesus, you just gave birth.
Just, oh, 100%.
You know, it's okay to take a break. It doesn't mean anything. Don't over-identify with like, oh God, this means it's over. All the intimacy's gone. It's like, no, let's come back to that season analogy. This is fine. This is normal. It's okay.
Yeah. And I think that leads us into like my next question was about partners, and perhaps, you know, it is the way of our, you know, we're in Australia, but our culture is very much like this, get your baby body back. And, oh, look at this. She's got a newborn and she's still at Pilates at 8 a.m. and everyone's on time and she's got a beautiful lunchbox packed and it's all fine. And everyone's, you know, nothing to see here. And I think then that partners then may fall into that going, oh, it's been, you know, 6 weeks or been, you know, a couple of months now and she's all good. And why is the sex not coming back? And a lot of partners and a lot of couples really struggle to have those conversations without embarrassment and shame. And the season analogy is such a beautiful way for people to have that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And just having these kinds of conversations is so important, like the fact that you're even trying in the first place. A lot of people will basically avoid it and they don't feel safe enough to talk about it. So just start by asking them when like a good time to talk is. And, you know, I think a really great way to prime any conversation, whether it's going to be really emotionally loaded or just something quite neutral, is to actually start with a cuddle. Like, priming your body with the hormone of oxytocin, which is compassion and empathy, is a great way to start. It just puts you in that more present and loving mindset, even if it is a loaded conversation. Like, empathy fixes everything no matter what. So, you know, starting with lots of love and praise and presence for what they are actually doing already, and then telling them what's going on for you and what you need change in without actually criticizing and judging. You know, say it within the context of like, we are going through this thing as a team, not me versus you. It's not about person, what you're doing wrong personally. It's just what we could do better as a system, and lots of love and reassurance. So yeah, it's really, really common for people to not feel sex after babies and just in general. I mean, libido is seasonal for an individual, and now you're trying to sync it up with two people. And it would actually be crazy to be horny constantly. I actually think that would exhaust your nervous system. And there's no such thing as like feeling, I guess, broken or like bad, for example. It's just libido is like this energy that lives inside you, and it's either kind of slow and quiet when it's not really being engaged with, or it's really fast and loud when you want to have sex. So firstly, manage your energy, you know, what kind of food are you eating? Are you resting enough? Are you hydrating? Are you moving? Do you feel enough joy? Stress management. What medications are you on? Medications are known to like lower arousal and ability to orgasm as well. So you really be aware of whatever you are taking and talk to your doctor about it. But I do feel like this phase in your life, when you've just had a baby, being the context, you have so much heart energy because you're just like so full of love. And I'm going to go a little bit holistic with you now, Sarah. But I think that when you have a baby, you're giving and giving and giving. And to rebalance and to actually feel like having sex, you need to learn to receive into the heart. So what conversations with who and what can you be doing in order to have your own heart filled up to receive love rather than just giving, 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 so that you can actually give it and have sex with somebody and so on. So it's really just about creating balance in love so you can receive and give an equal amount.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that once these conversations are had, then you can really take the pressure off, because I know a lot of women reach out to me and sort of say, oh, I feel like he'll offer to give me a back massage or try and like do something nice for me. But then I just seize up because I'm like, oh God, I know where this is going and I don't want to have sex. And it's like, I don't want to be touched anymore. And I just, and their mind just starts going down that rabbit hole rather than just being like, great, I'm just going to accept this. You know, this gift or whatever it is, and just sit in it, you know. But if you have those conversations first to take that pressure off and make sure the partner is not actually, you know, trying to lead you down that path, everyone's going to be so much more relaxed.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about having communication. Like, seriously, I mean, it's so broad, but it really is the most important thing in a relationship is communication.
I know. And it can be the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, for that reason. Yeah, it's just so important to, and you've got to get it right. And it takes time. And many people don't figure it out, you know, for at least 10 years in their relationship, and they finally find their rhythm and groove. It really is. It's a rhythm and it's a synchronicity that you have to learn.
Oh, definitely. And like you said, it's a team. Like I think that, you know, in early stages of our relationship when we had kids, it very much became this like trying to get one on the board. Like, well, I did this, so like I'm like 1 point now, so now you owe me that point. So, you know, whether it be housework or I'm going up my girlfriend's because you did that the other day, and trying to do this, you know, you feel like you're in the ring all the time having this battle, as opposed to both being on the same team. We've got this amount of stuff to do. We're doing it together. It's us against the world or the kids or like whatever else it is. And it's, yeah, getting into that team and that rhythm is just, and it, yeah, it can take time.
Exactly. It does take time. But yeah, I think it sounds like you've really figured it out yourself though, Sarah.
Oh, it's, yeah. But like you said, it's taken years. Like our youngest is 2.5 and, you know, 3 boys. So it's definitely taken time to get into that rhythm and to, I think resentment is like such a big killer of relationships, and particularly intimacy. Like the last thing I want to do is have sex with you if I feel like I'm doing all of the things and I'm resenting you because, you know, you'd work too much or you're not home early enough or, you know, just whatever else it is. So I think that, you know, that self-care and that filling your own cup then goes back to that, you know, you can fill your cup. If my cup's full, then we're all happy. Where if one person's filling their cup and the other one's feeling really depleted, then I'm not going to be so happy for you when you're having a good time over there.
I think what you're describing is so perfect for what I was talking about with teamwork. Like, it really comes back to, well, I got a point, I did the dishes, where's, like, you've got to balance it out. It's like, no, let's work as a system. Let's talk together, like, and be a team. That's actually, like, life-changing. And people are like, oh, yeah, I forgot, like, I love you. Like, I really forgot that I married you and that I said in my vows that I'd love you forever. You're forgetting that you're a team, even when it's hard. It's still about, like, no, like, empathy. We're in this together. How can we make this better for us, not me? Not you, but us.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And everything else just flows, like from, like you said, then once everything else will just naturally flow on, and the sex will come back and the intimacy will come back. And yeah, like you said, you get back to that where you were before.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'm going to fire off some questions at you. They are very broad.
Okay.
These are our frequently asked questions, and they really range, but some of them are really, really quite emotional. And I think that, you know, I put it out there to my community and sort of said, what would you ask if it was anonymous? And the questions that came in, obviously, it would be amazing for these people to come and see somebody like you and to work with you, but sometimes that's just not possible. So we're going to cover as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so partners who are suffering with PTSD, obviously I'm an ex-cop, and this is like something, PTSD is such a humongous thing within our emergency services and defence forces and things like that. And quite a few really close friends of mine are suffering really, really heavily with PTSD. And we've had a couple of people write in and sort of say that their partners are struggling with PTSD and the intimacy and sex have gone, and they're very much taking that carer role. And how can the partner not suffering open that conversation without hurting them, or try and make, you know, steps in the right direction to get that partnership back without obviously hurting their partner?
Okay, firstly, before I go into that, I'll just address, like, I guess the context. You know, I know you did say that it's not always an option to see a counsellor, but if it is, take it. Even if it's a free doctor, a 13, 11, 14 lifeline is right there for you anytime, whether it's you or your partner. And it's hard. It's a hard process. And that's the thing about relationships. It is a team through the hard times and the good times, but it's something that affects you too. So you also need to be taking care of yourself. So filling up your cup so that you have a sense of strength before you then go and help your partner and take care of them. And, you know, if you're doing the best that you can from a space of love, you're trying really hard, it's their responsibility for their response. You can't control how they feel. You can only do the best that you can do. Now, to talk about, I guess, strategy around this, people with PTSD have like a really broken and misplaced sense of safety in their body. They've got a nervous system that's basically, I like to call it it is called the window of tolerance, where our ability to tolerate life is very narrow. So they've got a really short fuse.
Yeah, I've never heard it like described like that. And that's just such a beautiful way to explain it to somebody that doesn't understand what PTSD is for somebody living with that.
It's funny, like being a counsellor, I forget that people don't know like this kind of stuff. So I'll just explain a little bit more. But basically, like, your body is stuck in a state in that window. It is stuck in a sense of like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, and I've forgotten the fifth one. There's five now. And they're always getting ready to escape the present moment. They can't live there. It's not safe for them. So your role that they can invite you to do, you can't necessarily force them on into this, but maybe having a conversation around this is a great place to start. But how can you create more safety for them? Because that's what they're missing, is safety. How can you be more dependable? This can be like a quiet, peaceful living arrangement and environment. Maybe it's responding quickly to a text so that they feel like they're loved. Consider their love languages, acts of service. Maybe they really need you to just like do all the difficult things that seem really basic to you, but will take them straight into that window where they can't tolerate anything. So asking permission to touch them, big one. You know, if they're suffering from a physical related PTSD, it's really, really important that even if you walk up to them just to like brush their hair from behind or something, that can trigger them. So it's about having these conversations like, hey, like, I'm just about to touch you, by the way, is that all right? And just, that took 3 seconds to say, and it could change everything. Finding, you know, back to safety, finding a way to bring more money in. That's a way that makes people feel really safe and stable. And make it a collaborative approach. This is not all you. It's not all them. Let them know that it's your journey as a team, that they aren't alone, and just be honest. Be honest about the fact that you feel like you're scared of hurting them. So, hey, like, I really want to talk to you about how I can help you, but I'm just scared that I'm going to hurt you. Like, I want to do my best. Like, oh, that's perfect. Say that. Like, And then, of course, remember your resources that I said at the beginning, counsellor, lifeline, which is 13, 11, 14, the police, obviously. Like, there's so many options out there.
Absolutely. I love the way you just described that, because I think we throw these terms around like PTSD, but if you've never lived with it or you've never lived with somebody with it, it can be really difficult to understand what that person's reality must be like. So, you know, someone will say to us, oh, I've left my job, or I've, you know, been discharged from my job because of PTSD. And we think, oh, that's really awful for you. But we can't understand it or begin to even help or empathize if we don't understand what it means. So I love the way you just described that. And there's obviously looking further into it if your partner is struggling with that, and learning it from that sort of perspective could just help so much in having those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, all comes back to communication.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. And that's such a difficult thing, isn't it? Like, we acknowledge how hard it is. But, you know, when you say to someone, oh, it's, you know, we're struggling with this, I know, just talk about it. And it's such a, you know, such a broad thing that people, I know, go, well, how? Like, what do I say? And I love some of the words you just used and shared to give people a start on how to start that conversation.
Yeah, I love my analogies. I have so many, because I feel like I'm different to most people. Like, I see the world in a really visual way, I guess, and things like seasons and window of tolerance and just these kinds of things are a really great way to communicate terms that are really like broad psychological things. I totally agree with everything that you said, Sarah, that I know I think a lot of people are undiagnosed walking around with PTSD from things that, like, you know, they think, oh, PTSDs are for people that have like gone through what we classify as traumatic events, like a murder, a sexual assault, all that kind of stuff. But it can be as simple as like a traumatic childbirth, or something happened in the car, a car accident, and they're fine now, but it was just that moment where the car got hit that, and now they're triggered forever. Like, there are so many situations that PTSD can occur, and we don't really live in a world, we don't live in an environment that actually encourages safety. We have to kind of force it these days, because we're in a very fast-paced world. It's really difficult to be present. It's very easy to be triggered and not existing in the present moment. So I think we all need to start learning a bit more about it and just checking in, hey, do I have it? Like, let's just have a conversation about that as well. Like, do I have PTSD? Do I have trauma, specifically trauma? It's just an important conversation to have with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think leading into the next question, it was quite a few about returning to sex in a relationship after cheating or an affair, which obviously it could be such a traumatic time for a couple. So specifically when the couple decides to stay together and the person who didn't cheat is feeling really judged, not good enough, really scared to put themselves back out there and to be really vulnerable, but obviously wanting to recapture that intimacy in that relationship again. Some tips or...
Okay.
So it's a big one, isn't it?
To clarify, this is for the person that didn't cheat, or they did cheat?
Exactly.
Okay.
No, the person that didn't cheat is feeling... I mean, I reckon we could probably cover both.
Yeah.
But the... specifically the person that didn't is just feeling so vulnerable to be able to put themselves back out there.
You know, what's really interesting about cheating is that whilst, like you've just said it, we could probably do both, they actually have the same remedy depending, like regardless of what side you're on, they both require forgiveness to move forward, self-forgiveness and forgiveness of the other person. So I'm just going to answer both really because they are very relative, but you know, forgiveness is the most important step in this, and it takes time to forgive. Like, the first thing that you've got to do is accept that you have to self-forgive, or accept the fact that you have to forgive your partner to move forward. Maybe you have to reformat the relationship in a way just temporarily so that you can kind of compartmentalize and process it. But eventually, if you're going to restabilize that intimacy, forgiveness is the only way out. And forgiveness is a really radical concept that people think just relates to like, oh, he lied to me and I forgave him. It's actually like a really big concept that comes back to the beauty of acceptance and compassion. Let's just talk about the person that did cheat for starters, so that the person that is the one on the other end can understand what they're mentally going through. Potentially a lot of self-hate, a lot of shame, a lot of self-loathing. But you know what? It sounds like that was from the other side as well. So again, they're really relative to each other. But you do have to self-forgive to move forward. And it doesn't mean that you actually accept or condone what you did, but it does mean energetically you are liberating yourself. Like, yes, I'm really mad at myself, but energetically I don't want to exist in that. I feel aligned with moving forward. And it's not really about that you aren't fixed yet or that you're not in a really great place. It's that you're actively trying to move forward, that you're making that decision and pouring on the self-compassion. So you didn't know what you know now, and you know you're not perfect, all of that kind of concept, all those kinds of conversations you need to have with yourself. And it's all about the effort to do better, not necessarily what you did. And sharing with your partner constantly, like, how you feel, like, hey, like, I just wanted to let you know, like, I'm really not feeling great about what I did again. And we're just going to have the whole conversation all over again. Just having that as much as possible to create sense of safety and trust again. And for the person that feels judged, scared and not good enough, I think is what you said, in terms of forgiving them, it really just comes back to, what are you willing to let go of in order to receive? Because this is the thing about energy and like, and seasons and everything I was talking about earlier, is that in order to receive something and to continue something that and move forward with it, you have to learn to let go. You can't have two hands clenched at once. One has to be open and letting go, and the other one has to be receiving. So what can you let go of in order to receive this person back into your life, to receive intimacy back in your life? If you want intimacy, you're going to have to start the journey of forgiveness, and it's really difficult. And I understand that you're feeling really judged and that there's some shame there from the sounds of it. It would be a great idea to talk to someone like a qualified professional to get some help on this. But I think self-compassion would be really, really helpful. Stepping into a space of wisdom and looking back at your younger self who didn't know any better, and just offering so much comfort. That is a natural state of a person, of an adult, is to be able to look back at a child or someone that's younger than themselves, even if it was only a year or a few months ago, and just think like, oh, you were so much younger than I am now. And I guess it's just that concept of wisdom. And from that space, you're able to forgive. So stepping into that, like, okay, what's my higher self and what's my strongest self? Think of this. And also on top of all of that, I'll close with this. Don't rush yourself. Again, same from the other side. It's all about the effort to do better, not the fact that you did what you did or what they did. It's about stepping forward together as a team, and it's just about the effort. It doesn't have to be perfect, just the daily effort to do better.
It must be so hard to get stuck in that history and not be able to move forward together, or feel like you are moving forward at separate stages. So it's back to that teamwork.
Yeah, exactly. Teamwork for everything.
And I think we could probably, another question was moving past partners' porn addictions. And mm-hmm. I feel like they're so probably could be looped quite together. Like, it feels like a resolution for that would be so similar.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of porn addiction, I just want to keep this really simple, but like, I think there's a wonderful Instagram page. The Instagram handle, which I'm sure Sarah will put in the show notes, is Fight the New Drug. And I guess that like that's a great place to go for just resources for both partners and the people that are addicted to porn. But eliminating all the shame and judgment around this, it is an addiction, it needs to be treated as such. And just having like committed weekly check-ins so that you both can rely on a conversation and communication that's ongoing, and having that team check-in. Yeah, teamwork, so important.
Okay, so moving on to men with erectile dysfunction, mm-hmm. Where to find help, and also for the partner who's left feeling, you know, shame and unattractive and rejected, or even that he is perhaps getting it elsewhere and that's why the problems are coming up.
Yeah. There's actually tons of research out there and help for people with erectile dysfunction. But to rattle off a few things I learned from my sexology certificates, they say lifestyle modifications are actually more helpful than medicinal. Like, that's where you should start. So check in with the smoking, the drinking, drugs, what's your diet like, resting, are you stressed, for example. That's a really great place to start. And then I'm not a pharmacist, a doctor, or anything like that, but apparently from what my research and my studies show is that the medicine that you need is like a PD, PDE-5 inhibitor. And that's just off the record. Obviously, go speak to your doctor about it. But there's a ton of like medicine and stuff out there specifically for this. But I actually want to say that there's no shame in this day and age around it, because their research is showing that young people with penises are actually buying this stuff recreationally just for sex with casual sex, just so that they can maintain erections for longer. So it's actually becoming a common thing. It's really interesting. So there's not actually that much shame about it. Young people are using it for fun.
So don't feel ashamed to reach out.
That's the point. Now, for the person on the receiving end where you feel like really unattractive and rejected, so I'll just say this, like erectile dysfunction is nothing to do with what's actually going on in their body and their arousal. So it comes down to a thing called arousal. I'm going to say this wrong. I always do. Non-concordance. But basically where your body reaction doesn't align with what you're feeling. So some people, for example, don't show wetness if they are aroused, and some people get boners out of the blue and they're not even like horny. So it's the same thing. It's got nothing to do with what they're actually feeling. It's just our bodies sometimes get lost in translation. So it's a great time to communicate your fears of what's going on and not taking that personally. So that might look like giving you verbal reassurance that, hey, no, you're really attractive. It's just for some reason this is happening. It's the first place to start. Just share vulnerably without accusing of what's going on, and just trust your intuition.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I think leading off that, how to initiate sex when your mind is like, yep, this is what I want to do. I want to work on intimacy. Like, this is where I want to be, but feeling a lot of body shame and that inability to, I want to say be brave, but I feel like that's the wrong frame of words, but you know, to put yourself out there, even in a committed relationship.
Yeah. I think first of all, it comes back to that inner union and sense of solidarity with yourself. Like, you will struggle to show up with another person if you don't first accept your own body. And we live in a world like even self-love is packaged to us like, oh, like self-love, I have to actually really like myself and love everything about myself to enjoy the world. Like, no, you don't actually have to like yourself to enjoy your body. It's very different. Like is conditional. Like is, oh, I like myself when. That's not self-love. Self-love is about I love myself no matter what. So it's about, I guess, loving yourself no matter what it looks like. And I know that's such like a broad concept, and people are like, well, how can I do that when I have cellulite? That's liking yourself. It's very different. Love is non-conditional. It's waiting for you right now, and you have to first accept your own body exactly how it looks. So
no expectations,
just as it is. That's where self-love, and that's where it's all waiting for you, and you'll learn that eventually. You'll try and like your way into love, but it will never happen. You have to first accept your body just the way it is. That's self-love. And I think some really helpful things to do, it's not really easy if you have a lot of kids or a lot of people around your home, but be naked more. Learn to just exist as this sexual being regardless of what you look like. So just walk around your house, even just your bedroom, just as a sexual naked person. Learning to look at yourself in the mirror and smile at yourself so that you positively associate yourself with your naked body. Learning to self-pleasure regardless of what your body looks like or feels like. Accept that you look the way you do and still turn up to sex, because sexual energy and feeling sexy, it's an energy. It's not a status. It's not like a thing that you are or not. It's just an energy that exists in our bodies, and you get to experience that no matter what you look like.
There's so much with this, with self-love, and you know, the more you do it, it's so cliche as it sounds, but the more you do it and the more you tell yourself these positive things, or you look at yourself and you smile in the mirror, it builds those positive pathways to your brain that actually exist. So the more you do it, they get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and all of a sudden it becomes your normal, and you'll go, wow, I can do all these things. I can put myself out there and I'm feeling really comfortable. And no matter how many kilos you think you need to lose, it's never about that.
Yeah, it literally isn't. You'll get there and you'll be like, oh God, I don't know why I waited for this. Like, yeah. I'm enjoying sex just the way I look now. I didn't realize it was going to be like this.
And if you do lose the 5 kilos or whatever you think you need to lose and you don't do the work, then it doesn't matter. Even when you hit that 5 kilo milestone, you still won't feel well. You still won't feel comfortable and love yourself. So it's really reinforced that it's not about what you look like. It's totally how you feel and how you treat yourself.
Yeah, I have full body goosebumps, like what you just said. My hands are like in the air, like, yes, sing it, sister.
We'll post that later with our little happy dance at the end.
Yes, we'll do that.
Okay, so a new term for me came up, a lesbian bed death. I had to Google it because I had no idea. tell me everything.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, look, I'll just share with you now that I don't really identify as anything, but I also don't identify as straight, and I've been in lesbian relationships for the last 5 years. So something that I am familiar with. And from my personal perspective and having been amongst the community, I have a lot of friends that are lesbians. We talk about sex literally all the time. I think where it's coming from, I mean, there is actually some research on this because the term has been around since I think the 1990s or something. But it happens from a lack of polarity. And this, again, I just want to say this has nothing to do with body parts. And if you have a penis or a vagina or whatever, like it's really just about energies that are being present in the relationship. So lesbian bed death is really just like a lack of sexual drive. Like everything just becomes neutral, but at the same time there seems to be like a pleasant happiness to it, like it's not a big deal. And then someone will be like, well, we haven't had sex in like 3 months, is that a bad problem? Like, so I mean, not everyone has a problem with it, but from my professional and personal perspective, it happens from a lack of polarity. So how can you create magnetism again by introducing individuality, so more quality time alone and more quality time together rather than just the same and resonance? You want to focus on how can I be different? How can we spend a bit more time apart? Because usually with COVID and everything, you'd be spending a lot of time together. And I mean, it depends what type of like lesbian you are, what type of person you are. Maybe you're really similar to each other, and you're just about creating that magnetism and difference again and introducing individuality. And that actually makes the magnetism stronger, and you'll be drawn to each other again sexually.
Amazing. So leading into that, I guess, is quite similar, is we had a couple of people reach out and sort of say, like, haven't had sex in 6 months and it actually repulses me. Like, don't want to, like, not interested in doing it alone, not interested in doing it with my partner. Like, and actually at the point where, like, I think repulses is quite a strong word. Where would they start?
Yeah, I get it. So they've got that icky rejection, like, I get it. And maybe the whole season analogy really resonates with you. Maybe you're in a winter phase where you're trying to make a square peg fit through a round hole, and that's okay. Like you don't have to explore sex right now. Maybe take a break. But if it's something that you really like are having a problem with, and you know, it's something that you want to fix, I really recommend exploring. So just putting a pause on sex, just accepting that that's not happening right now. You should never force yourself to do anything, but exploring like play and fun and joy and rest first, because what you're going to be triggering your body to do is learning to accept pleasure and accept fun and joy for the sake of hedonism, literally for no reason. And that kind of, like I talk about momentum quite a lot, it will build up naturally. So first of all, don't judge yourself. No shame around this. This is really normal. I have icky moments. Everyone has icky moments and months. Just exploring, having fun, having a play, being joyful. How can you create a bit more like hedonism and pointless fun into your life? And that's where sex usually segues, you know, from there.
I love that. And it's so like no pressure, you know, tips, like just relaxing into that play and fun that doesn't have to have anything to do with sex, just bringing that light into your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And or go and see someone like Catherine who can help you explore that. If that's too like, okay, well, where do I start? That's definitely when you're like, okay, if that resonates with you and you think, oh, but how do I do that? Definitely reach out, because, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
There was, I was actually blown away with the amount of people that said they were well into their 30s and 40s and have never had an orgasm. Women, like specifically women.
Yep.
And all of the questions about that. How can I, is it normal not to? How do I work this out? Like, and there was a few with I could before I had children, but am now unable to.
Okay. So first of all, I just want to say there are so many reasons for this. And yes, you're right. It's really common. And I actually think the research behind it, I think it's something like 60% of people that have vaginas have sexual dysfunction, being, and one of the dysfunctions is inability to orgasm.
Wow.
We have primary and we have secondary orgasm loss. So primary is you've never ever had an orgasm, and secondary is like you've had one and then maybe something's happened, like a baby, and you can't anymore. And there is a lot of help out there for these. And I'm going to get really passionate right now. My hands are going in the air like I'm talking. Because I don't think that enough sex therapists, sexologists, whoever's famous out there on Instagram are talking about it. You know, you ask a professional, someone who classifies themselves as an expert or a leading sexologist or whatever, like, I can't orgasm, and they just tell you, just don't focus on it, it'll happen naturally, like, whatever. I'm so serious about closing the orgasm gap. Like, it's kind of the reason I started. I briefly had an experience like this, but I managed to overcome it. And the more I read the stories about people not having them, I get really passionate about it. But so I think the first thing you need to do is reach out for help. You don't have to, but this is a really great place to start. So I highly recommend working one-on-one with somebody like myself who's like seriously committed to fixing this.
So they're better to go to a sexologist or a sex therapist over like their GP or their like, mm-hmm. You know, gyno or someone?
Look, I think it's a holistic approach, and it really depends on the person. You might be somebody that really just like wants a medicinal solution, or like you just want the hardcore research behind it, then like just go to your gyno or just go to your GP. But if you want to have a more conversation, like a counselor approach, a more holistic, thorough like examination and over a period of time, then, you know, use a counselor or a therapist or a coach like myself. And even better, work with a team, so all of them together.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not always financially viable to do that. However, there's a lot out there on Google for solutions, and there's lots of groups and people that are working towards orgasms. So there's usually a variety of reasons behind this. I'm just like thinking of things off the top of my head, but psychological, physiological, environmental, medicinal, like there's so many reasons that orgasms don't happen. So it's actually something that's really difficult to answer on a podcast without like, more information, but it's really, really common. And I just want to say that we don't actually live in a world that can cater to people with having orgasms, especially from a vagina. So, I mean, research shows that it takes about 30 to 45 minutes of preparation before even attempting to try pleasuring with the intention of an orgasm. So like, who has time for that these days? 45 minutes. Like, so you really need to like take stock of what you need and actually take a step back from the research and just start to look at your own body first. And I actually have a free ebook called Pleasure Mapping. Just head to my website. It's at the top banner. It's called Pleasure Mapping. Just download that and do all of the worksheets in that. It's seriously helpful to just identify at least a map of what's going on. And then from there, like you can take that to say a counselor or whatever, and like, look, this is what's happening and whatever. It just creates like a great background information for you to like see it all from a bigger perspective. But I just want to tell you, you're not alone. Oh my God. Like I have this question every week, someone different saying, how the hell do I orgasm? Like, I get it. So, I really want to help you. I really want to help you. So just, it's too difficult to answer on air right now on this podcast, but there is so much out there. You know, even if you don't want to work with me one-on-one, just message me, whoever this is, on Instagram, and I'll give you free resources. I'm so committed to like
fixing this. There was about like 30 of these people.
All of you.
Like, so all of you. Like, you are so not alone.
Exactly. Just send me a message and we'll talk about it. I've got a lot of help.
No need to be embarrassed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, and amazing. You said after kids. So this is the secondary loss of orgasm.
Yes.
I think for these people, I think working closely with like an OB-GYN or whoever delivered your baby or whatever, a gynecologist, your doctor, there's a variety of reasons, usually like on a physiological level. So torn muscles and nerves, maybe there is some trauma, a bit of pain. But I do want to say that through neuroplasticity, and this is probably too big again to talk about on the podcast, but through neuroplasticity, we're actually able to reconnect nerve endings and retrain our body to experience pleasure that we can remember. So I think episode number 25 of my show, Soul and Sex, answers both of these questions in detail, like how to have better orgasms, or I think it was something to do with vibrators, but it's still really relative to the idea of training your body to orgasm. So head to episode, I think it was number 25 of my podcast, if you want some more info.
Amazing. Okay, so this is total change of subject and quite emotional. There was a lot of questions around, is it normal? And, you know, I guess I'm sure the answer is going to be yes. So what can we do, and where moving forward in like losing interest in sex after leaving a domestic violence relationship or after a sexual abuse or even a historical abuse that's now, you know, either come back up for you emotionally recently or, you know, is always there, and how, how to get it back, I guess the question was.
Yep, absolutely. So firstly, I just want to say if anyone out there is in an unsafe situation, there's Lifeline, which is 13 11 14, always available to talk 24/7. Now let's answer the question. So it's really, really normal to have this happen. So the way that our bodies work is, you know how earlier I was talking about the window of tolerance? So for people who have had a DV relationship or have been in a scary situation for a prolonged period of time, their window of tolerance is really small. And the way that we're psychologically wired is we sexually cannot function. Why would we be focusing on procreating from an evolution perspective and arousal, which is, you know, to like make babies, for example, when we ourselves aren't even safe? Our bodies are not craving sex. They're just craving shelter and to be small and held. Okay. So say that in this particular circumstance, I'm only talking about someone that's left a DV relationship. Yeah. But say you're with somebody new and you're trying to explore sex, like how can you create safety in this relationship? What do you need to tell them to do? How can they create more safety for you? I answered this question quite similarly earlier, just about like what they can do better to create that sense of safety with the PTSD question. It's very similar. So sexual energy will come back when you start to feel safe.
That's so big, isn't it? Like that's just such a huge concept, and you can just see why that fear and that safety is just so important for those people.
Yeah, and it's really complicated, and it takes a while. But there is so much hope there. There's so many people, there are survivors and strong people who share their stories about, you know, I created a sense of safety in myself and now like I'm having the best sex of my life. Like I hear it all the time. There is so much hope for you. So step into your freedom. How can you create a sense of safety within your own body, like by yourself? Like what do you need to do in your life? Maybe it's boundaries. Maybe you get a really stable job, stable friends. And how can you create safety in your relationship and in sex as well?
And so should they be reaching out to someone like yourself as a couple, like with their new partner, or should they be reaching out sort of on their own at first?
It comes down to the relationship. You know, everyone's entirely different. I speak to everybody that shows interest in counseling or coaching with me. And if, you know, I feel like it's an appropriate thing for me to deal with, or maybe it's something that's more on like a psychology, psychiatry level or a GP level, then I help them find the steps involved there. And like, how do we, is this a couple situation? Is this, I see both of you at separate sessions? Like every single relationship's different, but there's no one right way. It really, it's a process like everything in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so flipping the topic a bit now. So we've got a woman that's in her late 20s, has just recently realized she's bisexual and is in a single stage of her life. How does she navigate? How does she even start? She's scared of her whole realization and has no idea how to move forward.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, because you're facing something that's like an identity, which is a schema of your world. Like, It's a world perspective. And that makes a lot of sense that you're feeling scared. So give yourself a lot of grace for changing a huge part of, well, not changing, just realizing a huge part of yourself and stepping into this new identity. It's like learning to walk, you know, but you have to learn to walk before you can fly. Or is it crawl before you walk? I don't know. Either way.
I like them both.
Yeah. Either way, it's just taking one step of the stairs at a time instead of looking at the whole staircase. Like, oh my God, just how can you expand your community and lifestyle to be what you need it to be? So to help nourish this identity change or identity realization or whatever it is, like how can you connect with a community and an environment that creates a sense of safety for this identity that nurtures who you are at your core? Normalize it in your own world first. Become familiar with this, with you, with yourself and what this looks like for you before you start to, you can do it. This is the thing. There's no right way to do it. You can go and get it wrong. You can go out and explore and try things and like, oh, actually I didn't like that. Like, I just want to normalize the wobbliness of life, like the vulnerability. Yeah. It's okay to stumble and figure it out as you go. Like you can't, it's not always just about waking up and just being like perfect. I mean, that's for anything in life. So, I mean, I'm speaking now from my own perspective because I feel like this might help. You know, it took me years to figure out exactly what it looked like for me, years. And I'm somebody that's very intimate with myself sexually and like all of that. So I think it's really important just to take your time and give yourself permission to get it wrong. Give yourself permission to navigate this from a space of like, whatever, I'll just give it a go. And creating
a vulnerable space.
Yeah, just create safety. How can I feel safe as this person, as who I am, and creating that around yourself is really important to encourage your who you are.
That's such great advice. And also into a new sort of stage of life is single mums. Mm-hmm. This particular single mum has absolutely no idea how to start self-pleasuring, never tried. She was asking, do I buy toys? Do I need to have things? Where does she start?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, I want you to take inventory on how you are pleasuring in your life everywhere, not just sex. So how do you eat your food? How do you watch TV? Are you scrolling through your phone at the same time as you're watching TV, like shoving food down your throat really quickly? Like, how are you engaging with pleasure throughout your whole life? Because that will tell you a lot about how you might show up sexually or like, I think it's just really important for everyone who's listening right now to take stock of how they engage with pleasure. And I know for single mums or single parents, it can be really hard to find ways to receive and rest. And we've spoken a little bit about this, but self-pleasure is a perfect opportunity to learn how to receive pleasure and to learn how to give yourself, like to bring energy inwards into that heart and filling up your own cup. So, I actually think that if you've never self-pleasured before, you kind of have a great opportunity. It's the gift of beginnings. You get to kind of wire your body for orgasms and pleasure just how you want to. A lot of people grow up, I hope I don't go on too much of a long tangent here, Sarah, but
we're totally here for it.
A lot of people grow up touching themselves one way without realizing that they're doing it. It's just very natural. Like they're only touching their clitoris, for example. And then they get to their 20s and they're trying to explore pleasure in different spots in their bodies and orgasm from different areas. And they can't because they've trained their body to do it one way over and over like a habit. But you basically have a blank slate to work with and you're able to just like wire your body exactly how you want to. And it's just like such a special time. Forget that you're like a single mom for a moment. You're just a human. You're just a person that's just self-pleasuring. It doesn't mean anything that you're only starting now. It's just a perfect opportunity. Now is always the best time to start something. And I'm just so excited for you. There's so much on the other side of this waiting and so much release of emotions. Like you're going to learn so much about yourself mentally and just like energetically in the world from this experience. Now I'm actually like pro all sex toys. I don't have a thing about like anti-vibrator just because I sell crystal pleasure ones. I'm not like super against
them. It's a thing I've realized, isn't it? It's a real thing in your, you know, sort of area of work of some sexologists are very, very against them.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think that's entirely fair. Like, I mean, I do have my qualms about vibrators because they're not all made really well and we can become dependent on them. Again, it's about how you use something, not It's about intention, really. And I think they're great for closing the orgasm gap and for people with different body experiences, like disabilities. Like, oh my God, so important. Like, I love the idea, but I think it's really important to try exploring pleasure from a space of mindfulness as well. And the problem with vibrators, and I'm only talking about this because you brought it up, Sarah, the problem with vibrators is that, like, they're not intuitive. They don't work with your body. Whereas I guess if you're using something that is not motorized, like it could be a different type of wand, like a steel wand or just a solid no vibrator one, then you're able to control it at a pace that feels a bit more intuitive and it works with you rather than sort of just on its own free will. And, you know, a lot of people who buy my crystal pleasure ones love it for that reason. Like, it's just far more mindful and it's slower and it's really great for people that have, I guess, are sort of new to the self-pleasure world and just want to try something new. It's just a great entry. And I think, like, having a crystal pleasure one's a great addition to any collection of sex toys, to be honest. Like, why not just try it?
They're super pretty as well.
Oh, they're like, so pretty. Like, why not?
They're so pretty.
They're at it. Yeah. But, like, obviously, like, no pressure, but the people that are buying it, like, love it. They just love it. And they are great. They're fantastic. And just for you, Sarah, everyone listening can have 15% off with the code Sarah.
You're amazing. Everyone's like, well, now I need to see them because I've never heard a vibrator being or a sex toy being described as pretty. And if a crystal wand sounds beautiful, it actually is.
Yeah, they're stunning. It's just something different to try. Like, why not? Like, you know, that's what sex is about, variety and experimentation.
Yeah, and even if you're in a coupled situation and you're, you know, there's a lot of people that are saying they've lost their spark or they've lost their way or that the, you know, the go-to, the tried and tested things aren't working anymore. I feel like when you're in a long-term relationship, you kind of get into that, you know what works and get in, get out kind of mentality, particularly when you know that, you know, a child's going to come crawling in your bed at any moment.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's a nice way that it's not sort of an intimidating or intimidating vibrating thing of its own to introduce into a couple relationship. It's yeah, very sensual.
I feel like now that these exist and that they're out there, there's something for everyone. Like, that's the way I describe it. Like, it's not, vibrators don't appeal to everyone. Actually, you'd think that, like, oh yeah, everyone has a vibrator. Actually, a lot of people hate them, so it's just nice to have some variety, and that's what I'm all about, like, something for everyone, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I thought this one was super interesting. This is my last question, so okay. You're probably exhausted.
No, okay. Like,
this one I thought was so interesting, and it's they're a woman committed relationship with her partner, great sex, but kissing does not gel and has never. Can they fix this and how?
Yes, I totally get that icky feeling. Some people just find it really gross and I totally get it. It's not for everyone. Sometimes I think people who are hypersensitive or really sensitive people find it quite overstimulating, like the noises and the licking and all of that. It's just a bit too overwhelming. So firstly, I just want you to check in with yourself. Do you have to kiss well? Like, if you're neither of you having a problem with it, is it actually that big a deal? Like, can you just do closed mouth kissing or cheek kissing or none at all? Like, don't do it because it's society's pressure, you know? But I think warming up to it, like doing specific sessions where you build up a lot of intimacy and you're feeling quite aroused, and then just try kissing slowly, like as in just a, you know, closed mouth, and then like after 5 minutes try open mouth, and then after 5 minutes try really light tongue, and then have a boundary where it's like, no, actually I don't like that. Just take it slow, like with any new sexual experimentation or anything in sex. Like, it doesn't have to happen to have great sex. There are other alternatives, but if you really want to do it in a mindful and slow way, lots of boundaries, take your time, and there's nothing wrong with you. This is really common, actually. Some people find it disgusting. So, you know, I think it's really just about personal preference. And I come back to my very first point of when we started, Sarah, and that is that great sex is whatever you define it to be, with the exception of hurting yourself or others. And if it fits the bill, then fuck it. Don't kiss.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And I think just by talking about it, it normalizes it, and people listening will go, yeah, I'm just not into it, and that's cool.
Exactly.
And, you know, partner seems to not be that interested in it either, so we're killing it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's totally fine.
Exactly.
I love it. Oh, I've so enjoyed talking to you. I could talk to you, I think, for hours and hours and hours. So we so appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed every second.
Oh, and I'll put everything in the show notes, how you can find Catherine over on Instagram. Her handle is her full name, which will be in front of your face on your wherever you're listening to this podcast. But her website, everything, we'll pop that discount code in there for you as well as the other resources that Catherine's mentioned so that it's super accessible for you. And oh, I've absolutely loved talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. I've loved every second.
Thanks for tuning in today. I would love to continue the conversation with you over on Instagram at the Conscious Project Podcast. Hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. And I would be so grateful if you would take a moment to leave me a 5-star review. It really does help. Take care.